Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome back to an adventure in history. Once again, we are happy you're joining us. I'm so glad to have invited a friend of mine down into the studio who also has a history in broadcasting.
I feel like I could just walk out and just let the two of you talk.
I know. Well, as I walked in here, I was like, oh, I should have saved her. But I'm just going to bring you back.
I am definitely not needed for this show.
I have Zeddy Nemluel here with us. Thank you so much.
It's an honor. Thanks for having me.
Well, I don't know about the honor part, but
we're going to have fun. So let's get started.
Let's get it going.
So I'm going to start with vintage slang to get us going. So this is a word that was used in 1919. So slang, here's the word. So I held up my little flashcard for those here. It's prom trotter, and it's a noun.
Prom trotter, and it's a noun in 1919.
So it was used.
I think that's a horse.
No.
Totally wrong.
I would have to guess somebody that was dressed up very dapper to go to the prom. Somebody that walks around in elegant attire.
Close. It is a student. It's a student who participates in all school functions. A prom trotter, a young person, especially female, who attends lots of parties, prom trotter.
I don't think that's coming back.
You don't?
I don't.
Okay. I think it also comes from the word promenade. So they doing lots, walking lots of places. Okay. All right. Well, not coming back, Zeddy. Not going to bring it back into your kids.
I'll try to float it with my Gen Z, Gen Alpha kids. See if it sticks.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. I got the big eye roll with mine.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So these are the big history highlights, things that happen tomorrow, as always, icebreakers or things to talk about around the dinner table. May 26, 1647. Alce. Young becomes the first person executed as a witch in the American colonies when she is hanged in Hartford, Connecticut.
Okay.
We always think it's Salem.
Right.
All right. We did a whole show about
the Salem witch trials.
All right. 1805, Lewis and Clark first sight the Rocky Mountains.
Okay. They're getting closer.
And yet they still keep going.
They're not yet disappointed.
On foot, seeing the Rocky Mountains. Just, I'm amazed that any people would keep going. 1868, President Johnson is acquitted in the Senate impeachment trial. Senate's not going to impeach him. 1907, John Wayne is born.
Oh, cool.
1908, Mr. and Mrs. Jacob Murdoch and their children become the first family to travel across the United States by car.
Oh.
1908, Los Angeles to New York City in a Packard 30. And guess how long it took?
That's what I was going to say. How 52 days.
Wow.
Am I close?
You're closer than I would have guessed. It's 32 days, 5 hours, and 25 minutes.
Oh, man. Can you imagine traveling?
Family cooped up. I want to know how old the kids were.
Oh,
because that kind of makes a difference. If they're, 16 and 17, it would probably be a little better.
Are your kids good car travelers?
Yeah, I mean, they have technology at their disposal, though. So what would the kids do on a long trip like that? I can't even imagine.
Complain that there's no McDonald's.
Oh, my gosh. It sounds like a nightmare.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
And I'm lucky because my kids fall asleep in the car like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Always have. Okay. All right. 1924, President Coolidge signs the Immigration Act of 1924.
Okay.
It's the most stringent U.S. immigration policy up to that time in the nation's history. The new law, also known as the Johnson-Reed Immigration Act, reflected the desire of Americans to isolate themselves from the world after fighting World War I in Europe, which exacerbated growing fears of the spread of communist ideas. It also reflected the pervasiveness of racial discrimination in American society at the time. Many Americans saw the enormous influx of largely unskilled, uneducated immigrants during the early 1900s as causing unfair competition for jobs and land. Under the new law, immigration remained open to those with a college education or special skills, but entry was denied disproportionately to Eastern and Southern Europeans and Japanese.
And women and children and people of color, yes.
At the same time, the legislation allowed for more immigration from Northern European nations, such as Britain, Ireland, and Scandinavian countries.
Of course. So there, I know you did a little dive there, but we should do a deeper dive in this because it is interesting how we truly were a country of immigrants in somebody else's country and then go this drastic 180 and really do want to isolate ourselves to have no more immigration. And we're now, centuries later, still having the same conversation. So what hasn't changed in the conversation? And why do our roots of immigration not stay within any of us? I mean, we do, right? I mean, people now, they want to know their DNA. They want to know where they come from. And most of us, or not, maybe in this room at least, know that our DNA is from outside this country originally. So, my two cents.
But we're not doing that show now.
Okay. All right. Zeddy's nodding thoughtfully. Right. No but weighing
our,
in on
but
that.
Our history highlights, I think, had the most impact on history. 1897, Dracula by Bram Stoker is published.
Okay.
Wow. You're doubting me. How about you, Zeddy?
You think that has
Did
the
it
most...
have an impact? Vampires, movies, TV, horror. Wow, okay.
A huge impact.
I'm getting voted out.
We love vampires.
That's true. Twilight came out of that.
Well, that's not a good thing.
Okay.
So you disagree. What did I miss?
I just think the Immigration Act, I think that that one was a bigger impact, just based on what we just were talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, let's get on to something that's even more interesting, and that is the life of Zeddy. So let's just start
somebody who's had a huge impact.
Oh, huge.
On our community.
At such a young age. Yes. So talk to us about where you grew up.
I was born in a house that my father made of salvaged wood out in Olney, Oregon. And that's where I grew up, spending days playing in the forest, picking huckleberries. And it was a wonderful childhood.
Is that house still there?
The house is no longer there, sadly.
But the property is.
The property is, yes. It's a beautiful country up there. And then also, I think when I was about 12, my father got a house in town. So I also lived in Astoria proper. He and my mom split up. So, well, Astoria was always home base because my dad was here. I also lived in the Columbia River Gorge and as far away as Hawaii growing up. So I kind of went back and forth between Maui and Astoria growing up.
Oh, I love that.
So just really quickly, because there's a lot there. You moved into town when you were 12-ish?
That's when my father got a house in town.
So that's old enough to really kind of know the differences. So what are your memories of living out of town versus in town? I mean, was this happy for you, or were you sad that you couldn't be out in the woods or what? Close to stores? What was that thought pattern?
I think it was a positive thing for our family. My dad really grew to not like the isolation out in the country. And he would drive into town every day just for the social aspect of it. And of course, to go to the grocery store and do errands. But he really wanted to move into town. And I liked it because I was closer to friends. I could take the bus to downtown. Downtown Astoria used to have everything that we needed. And, you know, a lot of fun too, like a great candy shop, Newberry's, you know, where I could buy like makeup and, you know, stuff like that. So I really liked living in town. But now that I'm a grown up and I live in town, I could also see the allure of living in the country.
But hopping on a bus at age 12 to whatever, 18, or how old were you when you were still hopping on a bus?
I was pretty young. I think I was pretty independent. And I mean, the city bus, it was really small. It wasn't like being in a big city, you know, it was an easy ride into downtown.
To meet your friends. Oh, I love that.
Sure.
So how much in that time period did you know everybody downtown? Did everybody know who you were, who your parents were? Because I think that's part of the allure of a small community. And we are still sort of small. So talk about that a little bit. Were you a a unknown person walking around, or did people know who you were?
My experience is a little bit different because while I've always been an Astorian, you know, I oftentimes lived with my mom during the school year. And so when I would come back to Astoria, I didn't know everybody, like a lot of the kids that, you know, knew each other since preschool and went to school together. My stepmom, though, she knew everybody. She worked in the canneries and we would go downtown, and I couldn't believe how she knew almost everybody we passed by name.
What a fun experience to be able to do that. I mean, and so what did you think, too, about going from Hawaii to Astoria? I mean, you came to Astoria during great time of year for Astoria weather.
Yeah, that was a huge cultural shift. I mean, I went from school in Astoria to a public school on Maui that had like 2,000 kids.
Oh,
and I was maybe one of 10 Haole kids, as they call it, you know, from the mainland, white skin. And I really fell in love with the culture there. And I was fortunate enough to make some really great friends. But there's a slang there, pidgin, that I had to learn. I couldn't really understand what people were saying. I was used to wearing a big kind of ski jacket all the time. It was kind of like my shell, my comfort thing. And I actually kind of wore that around the school ground at first when I was there. But eventually I wasn't wearing the jacket anymore, and I got used to island life. And I was walking around in my slippers and speaking pidgin. And coming back to Astoria, I had never realized how awful the weather was here because I was so used to it. And I'm like, I don't know if I like this so much.
And you went from like playing outside when you lived here to actually like being somewhere where you're outside all the time.
Yeah. And it's easy there too to kind of like take for granted, you know, living in the perfect climate all the time, because it's always very nice there.
So as you're growing up, what are your interests? What direction are you going? What were you thinking that you wanted to grow up and be?
I really wanted to be a commercial airline pilot. I changed my mind after I took my first flight lesson. But I had always been interested in writing and creative, you know, kind of arts. And I ended up going into journalism. My dad is an artist. My mom is a musician and a teacher. And, you know, I just kind of thought journalism was a professional art.
Yeah. So what did you do with that then?
Well, I decided to go into the electronic media sequence and worked in television news. And when I moved back to Astoria as an adult, I worked in radio news.
Okay. But prior, so you worked in TV news as a reporter.
Yeah, I worked my way up. I started when I was in school as an intern, got my first break as a writer on the morning show my senior year of college at U of O. And my shift was 3 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday.
Oh my gosh. And you went to school.
And I went to school, and my friends were still partying and socializing, and my life changed pretty drastically then. But I was so thrilled for the opportunity to be a part of that news production that I had the energy to wake up and do those dreadfully early morning shifts. And it was really thrilling, and just worked my way up, you know, as a producer and a photographer, a reporter. You probably know a one-man band.
Yes.
And yeah, eventually I got to be an anchor and a reporter. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. But then I decided to move back to Astoria, and there's no TV stations here.
Right.
Had there been, would that have been continuing your career?
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. I would have needed to, you know, I was in Eugene at the time, and I would have needed to move up to a larger market. I had done it for about 5 years, and I had kind of gotten to the point where I had done everything that I could in that TV station, climbing the ladder. And I'm really grateful for those opportunities and for being able to learn there and make mistakes. But it was time, you know, to apply to larger cities and larger markets where I could be with people that were better than me and learn from them, or do something different. But Astoria called me home.
And Astoria is small, so it would be considered a small market. And it is a small market for radio and print news, which still existed when, because I moved back around the same time as you, just getting out of television news at the same time as Eddie. And it is an interesting perspective moving from that fast-paced lifestyle to here. So how did you make that transition? Because I do know what comes next in your life.
Yeah, that was so much different. I remember some advice that I got from one of my dad's friends. You know, he said, if you're thinking about going out at night or doing anything, just forget about it. Like, it's not going to happen here. And he was right. I was the small town pace of life. Yeah, I was in my 20s and I was used to going out at night with friends and staying up late. And that really needed to change being in Astoria. But I think all of the other, you know, positives, being close to family, being in this beautiful place and being able to have great opportunities here kind of helped make up for it.
So you're doing radio. And then what comes next?
Well, I worked for KMUN, Coast Community Radio, doing news. And then I got a job at KAST and doing news as well. And that was really great. But I had been interested in business for many years. I actually started a stand at Sunday Market. I was a vendor doing grilled albacore tuna. I was really fascinated with the OSU Consumer Seafood Lab doing studies about local troll caught albacore and how the mercury level was so much lower than all this big South Pacific albacore we'd been hearing about in the news, and the omega-3s were higher and it was much healthier. So I decided I am going to dabble into business here, and I started a food stand. And then one night I was at the Workers and I saw Floyd Holcomb.
I love this. I had no idea this origin story.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I had actually been out to Pier 39 and Floyd had given me a tour, and I did a news story on the transformation of Pier 39. I knew it because that's where my stepmom had worked for like 30 years back when it was seafood processing. I had worked there as well. Oh, she had gotten me a job there as the coffee girl. I took care of the break room, and it was kind of a lowly position where I laundered aprons and gloves with fish guts on them and cleaned the bathrooms and did work that other people didn't want to do. And of course, make sure the coffee was ready at break time.
And what age were you when you were doing that?
That is when I was, I believe, my first summer home when I was in college. I was the coffee girl. So I was pretty impressed with what Floyd had done out at Pier 39. And when I ran into him at the Workers, he said, "Hey, you know that space that's supposed to be a coffee shop? The person that was going to open it decided not to, and it's available." And I was like, "All right, I want to do it."
Oh, my gosh.
And I was young enough and inexperienced enough in business, you know, to just be able to kind of go with my heart. And I'm glad that I did. And I learned as I went, you know, about business. But I opened Coffee Girl in 2006.
Very successfully, I might add, too.
Thanks.
Especially for a new business, right?
How fast did it become iconic and that you would say it was a success?
That's true.
Well, I'm not sure. I found it really important to be there 7 days a week and be really consistent with my hours and really cater to the building clientele that I was having, people that worked out in the offices there, as well as people that were starting to discover it, because it is off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. And so I had to work really hard, you know, without any employees at first, and slowly started building employees and building clientele. And so it took a little while. And when I ended up selling it, I really, really wanted to make sure that it kept on going and that it was still there for all of the clientele. And I'm really pleased to see that the current owner is doing such a good job too.
And so when you started, was it just coffee? And did Coffee Girl, the name, just come to you immediately?
I did know exactly what to call it because of my experience in that building as the Coffee Girl. So it's nice to know that the Coffee Girl is still serving workers on their breaks out at Pier 39.
I love that. And truly, like, was it just coffee to start? I mean, because now it's a cafe. I mean, you can get a full meal there.
Yeah, I slowly started building food. I created recipes and got more equipment and just kind of built on coffee and some simple pastries to include more food because, you know, a lot of people that worked out there were asking for food and people that would make the trek out to the east end of town and all the way across that bridge were oftentimes hungry when they wanted their coffee.
Sure. So then moving on from Coffee Girl, you get involved in another pretty large and very successful business project.
Yeah, I got married and we had a baby pretty quick and then had another baby. And my husband has a business and we had two businesses and two babies pretty close together. And that was a bit too much. So I did sell Coffee Girl, which was very sad at the time. Took a little bit of time off with my babies. And then I got into working for the co-op doing the newsletter part-time. And that ended up working into a job as the marketing director. And that to me was a perfect blend of business and journalism, the marketing position. And that's back when the co-op was in the smaller space downtown.
But this business that your husband and you were building at the time, you were part of that too. And it started small as well. We're talking about Fort George Brewery. And much of that, at least original concept that you have, I mean, your father's art is in there. The food and the beverage. I mean, how did you guys work together and how did you do it? Two kids, you know, sort of transitioning out of the other business. Then he has this new business, but also pretty, you know, a pretty big vision, but you started small.
Chris and I both opened our businesses kind of at similar times. I had opened Coffee Girl before he opened Fort George, but we were both entrepreneurs, fairly young at the time, in our 20s, both into business. And I think that kind of mutual interest drew us together. He had a business partner, Jack Harris, when he opened Fort George. And so they really had the vision and they really did the work. By the time I met him, Fort George was up and running and had a smaller but excellent crew. And I had Coffee Girls, so that was kind of my separate thing. And so my role in Fort George, besides being a beer taster, has often been and still is primarily kind of holding down our fort at home while Chris is out holding down the Fort George. So I really can't take a ton of credit for Fort George. Other than, you know, kind of the home life that we have and allowing Chris to have the time to go out there and do the hard work necessary.
Well, you say holding down the fort.
I love that.
You did not just stop and do that. You were still doing a lot of
these other things.
And because we only have about 5 minutes left, why did you run for city council and what did you get out of that?
Yeah. Because I love Astoria and I was on planning commission for 9 years. And so, yeah, I kind of wanted, you know, I had learned about the city from the planning perspective and I had wanted to have a larger role in it. I was really interested in local politics from being a reporter. And it was just kind of my chance to get to learn about local politics from the city councilor perspective. And, you know, it was a great 4 years, but it's definitely a tough position. Everybody who's on the council has other jobs and other things going on, and it's a volunteer position, and you have to make a lot of tough decisions about the city that affect a lot of people.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
I don't see. That's why I asked, because I don't understand. I mean, I get wanting to make your community better, but it also seems like a thankless job, that people are just always unhappy that the pothole isn't filled, or they didn't like that decision or this decision, and all the homework you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just showing up to a city council meeting. It's reading a lot of things and becoming knowledgeable about a lot of things.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of homework involved, and hats off to everybody that does it. But, you know, I feel like in order for our democracy to succeed, we all need to do our part. I felt like, you know, at the time, that was my part, to serve on city council. I had the experience from being on planning commission, and there were some things that I wanted to get done. And so I realized, though, that progress takes a little bit longer to get done than you want.
Yes. So you have three children, and now you're raising them here in Astoria. What are the things, or what are the takeaways you're trying to instill in them that helps them appreciate where they're living?
I think that they really like Astoria, and they've talked about wanting to live here when they're grown up. And I couldn't be more pleased, selfishly. I think that they're having a different childhood than I did, in terms of being here for their entire childhood and not living, you know, two different places. And I think that stability has been really good for them. And it will be interesting to see what they do. But they've had a wonderful upbringing, I believe, in Astoria. And it's really neat to kind of see this full circle, since Chris and I grew up here as well.
So what are your favorite things to do as a family, or even just yourself?
I walk my dog every day in the beautiful forests and the river walk around here. I love going to the gym at the Astoria Aquatic Center. You know, I spend a lot of time at home. I bake sourdough. I garden, you know, just kind of wholesome mom things when I'm not running around to sporting events for my kids.
I love that. I do see a t-shirt out there, though, that says, "I hold down the fort." So he can run the fort. George.
It's a good line.
Right? I mean,
it's a very good line.
I think he's going to be surprised when he hears this, because he hasn't heard that line until now.
I mean, and there, you can use the logo, because, you know, with permission, of course. Yeah, I like that.
With permission.
Yes.
So we've got about a minute left here. What do you hope Astoria looks like for your kids in 20 years?
Oh,
is there anything,
man,
specific that you're like, oh, I hope that this is here, or that's gone?
I hope Astoria doesn't lose its grit. I mean, it's changed so much since I was growing up. I hope that its authenticity stays intact somehow. I hope that we can balance progress with preservation. I think right now we've done a good job of that, but as citizens, we need to take a proactive approach.
I love it.
It's a great answer.
I think she should run for office again.
I was gonna say,
I don't know. A couple more years, Sadie, you know, we'll come back to you and remind you. But thank you. You have made an impact, and you'll continue to do that with your family and your kids as well. So thank you for that. And thank you for your time today.
Thanks for being here. Go make some history, and we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society, and brought to you by KMUN.